All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, this is Nate Thompson, and you are listening to Nasty Knuckles. Enjoy.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Terry Nasty Schottemeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
Welcome back to Nasty Knuckles. What's happening, Nast?
What's up, Rigorilla? How was your Christmas, big fella?
It was great. Still recovering from overeating.
I thought you were going to say something else, but okay, you were overeating. Maybe I was on the other side of that.
You're overserved.
My daughters, Peyton and Bryce, came over, and Elvis had his ginger ale. He thought he was drinking wine.
There you go. You get a buzz?
And he thinks he did. It's hilarious, yeah. Actually.
High fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, that, which I know you love when the girls get a hold of some sugar. It's so funny. But had a great Christmas, man. Dad was here, and we had a good time. Pretty quiet, but fun.
Nice. It was a great one. Glad it's over with and all the stress and buildup of it.
Goes quick, though, man.
Yeah, it goes quick, yeah. Yeah, so I'm happy that at least Christmas has passed, and I think it's a little... smoother on in the rest of the holidays here. So
yeah,
leading up to New Year's Eve. I'll be in bed by 10 p.m.
You won't even see it. You will not see the ball drop. I can guarantee you that.
You were right about that, Nast.
Oh, man.
What do we got in hockey world?
A lot of COVID, they're saying.
Omicron?
Yeah. I don't know what it's called, but that's what we seem to be having a lot of. In all seriousness, don't want to make light of it, but I loved Stevie Yzerman's quick little interview.
Loved it as well. Got to ask some hard questions.
Zero disrespect, as 100%. He was saying it, and he made that a point. But, you know, the NFL went to the policy of only checking if you have symptoms, which seems to make sense because
of course
talking to the guys that we're going to get into here in a minute that have tested positive, they don't even have symptoms. So it's not making light of it because some people have been really sick and it's nothing to joke about. But at the same time, these elite athletes are, all this is happening in the U.S., forfeited a game today at the World Championship, and it's getting wild here.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's becoming a little excessive, especially with the testing. These guys are vaccinated, essentially living in a bubble anyways.
Yeah.
If they don't have symptoms, I mean, like let them play. I mean, yeah. I mean, obviously, right? I mean, that's what you do with any other condition if you didn't have to test and then test positive for it. Right. So, unfortunately, the Flyers are out. Five guys, Ellis being one of them, who's already on the shelf. So, Hart, Ellis, Couturier, Lotz, and Brassard. They get back Frost and Hazy. So
thank goodness.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know,
Obviously shorthanded going on the Western swing here.
Yeah,
three games in four nights. It's gonna be challenging for him, especially coming off. I don't know how many days it's been now. Six.
Seems like forever since I've watched a National Hockey League game, unfortunately, but yeah.
So they're going to have to find some juice on the road, find some help from a couple of their call-ups. So obviously someone's going to step up. A few guys have to step up, so we'll see how it goes. But unfortunate with the COVID stuff, it's just plagued. I mean, not just the Flyers, obviously.
Yeah.
Around the NHL and other parts of the hockey world as well. So it is what it is. You're going to have to deal with it. Hopefully they can change their policies around that and just not overly test these guys. You know, if you're sick and got symptoms, obviously.
Right.
But
right.
Enough with this, healthy until proven sick, or sick until proven healthy type of deal. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
We got to move on. So that's just my opinion. But echoing what Steve Yzerman is saying there.
Yeah.
And then in Seattle, our boys and girls.
Fans of Philly. Fans of
Philly are there out there right
we
now.
We miss you. I wish I was on a bird heading out there now.
I know.
I'd love to be there, but...
it'd be a cool trip to be a part of, for sure.
Yep.
We'll
join them again here, maybe for a couple more.
Yeah.
They're coming up in Long Island and Nashville. We know about Smashville for sure, but what a great time we had in Arizona, man. That was awesome. That was awesome.
Looking forward to the next one. 500 fans, Nashville.
Yes.
March 27th, NAST.
I'm ready.
You better be ready.
I'm ready. Sudsy says he wants to come. His birthday is the 28th.
Oh, my God.
And I said, you are not allowed.
Bring him in.
No.
Bring him in.
Not a chance.
Do a special edition pod right at the bar with 500 Lord. Philly fans.
Oh, boy. That would be fun. That would be fun.
Right on. Well, looking forward to that trip, obviously.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple more in there in between. We're not sure if we're going to be a part of, but definitely March 27th in Nashville.
Yes.
All right, Nas, I think we're ready to rock episode 55 with our boy, Nate Thompson.
Nate Dog.
This episode was presented to you by Curaleaf, a Pennsylvania medical marijuana dispensary, 12 locations, amazing, knowledgeable staff. They got all your cannabis goods, Nas. I know you partake when you're feeling a little stressed, you're struggling with sleep.
I may.
You may.
No, you may they're dabble. Great. They're great. I may, yes.
But,
I
do. You know, whether you're in got a pain management issue, sleep issue, disease state, you name it, there's 22 medical conditions you can apply for a medical card in Pennsylvania. So check them out. Curaleaf, curaleaf.com. Great medical marijuana dispensary.
Yes.
All right, Nas, let's go.
Let's go.
Episode 55.
Here we go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we are very fortunate to have number 44 from the Philadelphia Flyers, our main man, Nate Thompson. Nate Tomer, I just want to call you Nate Dog. I just want to so bad. I know that's probably not your nickname. We heard actually something else Riley might bring up in a minute. But Nate, thanks so much, man, for jumping on with us, brother.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, boys. Yeah, I have heard Nate Dog a little bit, but you're more than welcome to call me.
I love it. I love that. Yeah. Nate Dog. I've been calling you that all day, and they're like, that's what the boys call? I'm like, I don't think so, but that's what I'm fucking calling him today. Nah, man. Well, when I finally did get to meet you, I've watched you for years. You were just saying jokingly, you know, oh man, I'm old, dude. I'm old, bro. I remember you when you first came in. We were talking about this as well. You were in Providence playing your first pro games, anyway, right out of junior, and it was the lockout year. What it was? I know you were in junior most of that year, but the league was unbelievable that year. I mean, the team you came and joined there. I mean, Bergeron. I mean, all those guys. You can go down the list, but anyway, I've known about you a long time. I finally got to really meet you with Snoop Dogg. Well,
oh, Snoop Dogg.
Not really with Snoop, but kind of fits. Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg and Nate Dogg.
Yeah, right.
But anyway,
kind
man.
Kind of.
What's going on? What are you up to right now?
Well, right now I'm in LA right now, doing my physical therapy here. There's a physical therapy place called Elite Ortho Sport that I went to when I had a previous surgery done in 2016. And, so after I had the surgery, I had the surgery out in Vail, Colorado, with Dr. Peter Millett, and everything's good. I mean, it was a successful surgery. Everything's been, moving along well. And, I'm about, a month into rehab now in PT, and it's kind of an exciting day. I got my sling off today, so I'm wearing that anymore, which is nice.
The big step.
That is.
The big step. So, yeah, so I'm out here, and, my girlfriend lives out here, so I'm kind of staying with her right now, and she was kind of helping nursing me back to health a little bit for the first couple of weeks. Because the first couple of weeks is kind of rough, So, there was some – I needed some help in some different areas, whether it was taking a shower or whatever it was, So
yeah, I bet.
She was helpful there. She was helpful there. But I'm out here doing my PT, and hopefully, as things move along and progress, I can get back to Philly, get skating, get back with the boys soon.
Yeah, I know they're missing you, man. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. How is the recovery coming along? I know you said you got your sling off. Is everything on schedule? Ahead of schedule?
I like to think ahead of schedule. It's crazy nowadays with these surgeries and what's going on. I mean, I know for me, I had my surgery in Vail, and the next morning I was already doing PT. They already had me moving my shoulder the next morning, and it's just how it is these days, and how fast they want things moving, and it's pretty cool. But I like to think I'm ahead of schedule, and I'm going 6 days a week, and just trying to get back as fast as I can. It's not fun being out. I've been in this situation before, luckily, so I kind of know what to expect, but at the same time, it's not the best situation, especially when you're an athlete or a professional. You want to be in the trenches with the guys. When you're not, it can be tough.
Absolutely.
100%.
You doing anything for your mental health and keeping that sharp? Because as you mentioned, and we kind of talked about before, it is a grind when you're on the shelf, not being with the guys, and obviously you're rehabbing the physical body, but you're almost like isolated in a sense.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason I did come out here. I think sometimes, when you are injured and you're in that city, you're not going to be around the guys, and you're kind of more alone. We're not, I'm with, a girlfriend. I had some family here. I was able to kind of turn it off, I guess you could say, take a little mental break from the game and just worry about, spending Christmas, spending the holidays with, people you care about, people that you're with. And it kind of helps, separate a little bit, so where you're not, thinking about, I need to get back there. Well, what's going to happen if I don't get back at this time? And, your mind starts future tripping a little bit. And
yep.
I think just kind of coming out here, and it's helped me mentally, I think, with my recovery, especially having a different, a different place to go rather than going to the rink every day, where it can be, you guys know, I mean, sometimes, as an injured guy going to the rink every day and, not being around the guys, it can be tough, And so I think this is for me mentally, and, the things I've gone through in the past with my mental health, this is the best for me mentally and the best for my recovery to get back to 100% to get with the guys.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well said.
And glad you recognized that and were able to make a decision around that, because I think, these younger guys don't really have the luxury maybe to do that. You know, they don't even necessarily know themselves well enough yet. But, you know, being an older guy, exactly, and, you know, have been through the ringer a little bit, you know, making a decision like that is big, right? I mean, this is not just your physical body. More importantly, it is your mental health. So if you can find a way to rehab both and stay peaceful and you know, and tranquil and all that good stuff, you made the right move for sure. And the fact that you thought about that in your decision is shows some wisdom for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah. It's definitely, I think you said it, it helps that I've been around a little bit. I've been through the ringer a little bit, but you know, you're right. Sometimes young guys, you're right, they don't even know themselves yet. You know, I mean, I think if I was a young guy, I have no idea. You know, you kind of go through the motions and have no clue. So, like you said, it's one of those things that, I just have to, it's like a muscle, you know, you have to practice. I got to make sure that I stay on top of it and I don't let things get too bad.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
well, wish you the best with the recovery, man.
100%.
Thank you.
It's a grind. It. You know, obviously a lot of time and effort, but it'd be nice to see you back on the ice and helping the boys back out. You know, I think things have turned around there in Philly. Obviously, since the movement with the coaching change, the boys seem to be finding some sort of chemistry.
Yeah.
I think you'd fit in nicely right about now.
Yeah.
You know, within that chemistry. Look forward to getting you out there and helping the boys continue to climb, because it is that, you know, it's going to take some work.
Tomer, your first trip into Philly, a year and a half ago, I guess, 2 years ago, at the deadline, you came in and went on a nice run there. It's too bad, game seven, losing game seven. But what I was getting to is we were shocked that you didn't re-sign in Philly. Now, I don't know any of the story behind that, but we talked about it on one of our shows this summer when you signed. They were like, thank God, because they were really missing, you know, your style of play, if you want to say. Obviously, you do a lot. You kill penalties. You're a hell of a penalty killer. You bring energy. And you just do all the things, like we always say, almost, I don't want to say old school, but old school. You know your role. You accept it. You do it so well. And you're so well-liked. I've talked to other equipment guys leading up to this to talk to you, and just other players that know you, and they have nothing but great things to say. So we were jacked when you re-signed here, and it's just something I think this team needed, especially in Philadelphia. You're a Philadelphia type player. I know you've played on a lot of teams. Everybody wants you, bro, because you played on a few teams, eh? Everybody wants you, man.
The most wanted guy in the NHL.
Yeah, so it's just...
That's a really good way to look at it.
But seriously, we were so jacked. In one of our pre-season shows, we were talking about that, getting you back. Was it something you were, like, excited about? I mean, I don't think you're going to say no, but it just seems like a good fit for you.
I was pumped to come back. And to be honest, the previous year I wanted to come back. From the time I got to Philly, it was like an instant fit for me. The city, the guys, I mean, everything. And you know, sometimes things just don't work out with free agency, right? It happens so fast. It was a weird year, a weird free agency with, what it was in October. I don't know when it was in October sometime.
Yeah. So strange.
Yeah, it was strange, right? And it was a short one, and it was like there was a lot of time to talk with teams. So, you know, as an older guy, you know, it was, can't really turn down a deal and wait on another team and all those things. And you know, like I said, it was just a weird year, and it just didn't work out. And unfortunately, this past offseason, Major was able to talk to Chuck again, and we got it done pretty quickly. And I was ecstatic because, I love the city. I loved everything about Philly. I mean, it was like you said, you know, I'm the type of guy I consider myself more of a blue collar guy. And, you know, I came from that, growing up in Alaska, and Philly kind of reminds me of that with the people and, and how passionate they are about their sports, which I've learned very quick. But yeah, I mean, so I unfortunately, the previous year, our season got cut short because of the pause and then the bubble, and then unfortunately now I'm hurt and I'm not with the team. But it's been a great place, and I've loved it here. I mean, it's a great group of guys. Like I said, it's just been a lot of fun to be a part of the Philadelphia Flyers.
And it seems like, throughout your career, you've moved around a bunch, and it seems like you're going where teams are trying to build out their fourth line with obviously a glue guy and a guy that wins faceoffs and kills penalties. But it seems like, everywhere you've gone, from what I've read, it seems to be like the same story. They're looking to, stack, to build up their fourth line, add some more depth and grit and character and all that good stuff. It's not surprising you landed up in Philly the first time, and then it's certainly not surprising that you landed up in Philly a second time, because you definitely embody what Flyers hockey is all about in so many different ways. So, for me, like Nasty was saying, like when we talked about this, like last year, it was just missing that and that energy, that spark, that sandpaper. So, it was really nice to see you back in Philly for that reason, because God knows, the fans just want something to cheer for, and it's just the hard work, like you said, it's that blue collar attitude, it's the grind. Showing up every night and doing the intangibles, right? It's not always about fighting or the big hit, but it's getting greasy and winning those hard face-offs and killing those tough penalties and all that good stuff. So it's nice to see you back, and I'd like to think that you're going to be around for this push, the playoff push, and some. So
yeah,
you embody it so well. And, looking back on your career, like, Nasty talked about it at the start, and, I remember playing against you early, but it was my first year in Philly, 2004, 2005 lockout, and you come out of the Western Hockey League and landed up, I think, suiting up 11 games in the AHL playoffs, which is pretty impressive, coming right out of juniors and being on a good team, right? I mean, Providence was a good team. And we landed up beating you guys in the semifinals there. But talk about your experience then. I mean, coming out of Western Hockey League in pro hockey, it was that year the best league in the world, in my opinion. And then to suit up 11 AHL games is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was kind of a whirlwind, I remember, because it was my 20-year-old year in the Western Hockey League, being at the full lockout season, right? Everyone kind of got held back in whatever league they were because – there was no NHL. And I remember getting a call to my agent saying, Providence wants to sign you to what it would have been, an ATO to come to Providence, right? And to be honest, I expected just to come to Providence, practice, be around the playoff run. And I think someone got hurt or whatever it may be, but I put my head down. I didn't say a fucking word when I got there, right? It was like, and just worked hard in practice. And eventually, I remember I think it was my first game was against Lowell, and the guy got in the lineup and, just tried to do the intangibles of what, playing on the fourth line, right? I was 20 years old. And I remember, had a big hit in the first period. And then at the end of the game, I think we ended up losing. I don't know which game it was. And I think we got in there was obviously a lot more fighting.
Right.
And I think I got tied up with like Commodore or some, a big guy, and I was only 20 years old and hadn't fought that much at this point. So, and just kind of, got in the good graces of the coaches then, and we started going a little bit of a run, and they kept me in the lineup, and it was awesome. I mean, you were right. I mean, that to me, that was like when I was playing in those playoffs, that was the NHL, because there were so many guys. Like, I'm coming out of junior and I'm seeing all these guys that are regular NHLers that are playing in the American Hockey League now, and I'm like, this is unbelievable. And then and then just the series we had against you guys, and just playing when I was playing with Colt Moore and on my line and seeing all the fights, and then at warm-ups and guys guys are sticking each other, and I'm like talking about it right now because I kind of miss it. Like, that was fun, you know. Like, I was like, that was kind of like a highlight of my career, even though it was the beginning and it was the American Hockey League. But that to me was, I think for me it was a real big eye opener. I think for me to like, okay, if I want to make it, I have to play a certain way, and I'm gonna have to change my game a little bit. I'm gonna have to be really good at these little things to be able to have a, you know, a really good professional career. And playing in those however many games it was, and getting that taste of what it's like, and, you know, at such a, you know, 20 years old, coming out of junior during that lockout season, and it kind of put me ahead of the game a little bit going into my first full year pro, and kind of like applying myself and knowing what I need to do to, you know, to move on and get a job in the NHL.
Yeah. It's, I got a question about that. Now, did you dye your hair with the boys?
Did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You remember that?
Oh yeah. It was so fucking,
I mean, how do you not, being a 20? Like,
of course you have to.
Did Brent Thompson hold you down and make you do it? Or did you just say, all right, boys, I'm doing it. Tomer.
I think Tomer, or I think, it was either like Brendan Walsh. Like, Walsh, or like it was Colton Moore. I think it was before my first game in Lowell, and they were like, "Hey, listen, you need to go fucking dye your hair right now."
It
was before my first game. I think they said you need to go dye your hair right now, or like you're not gonna like you. That's, you have to get it dyed before you play. I went and got my hair dyed like the day of the game, before the games. So, like, they made me go do it. So, but you know, obviously, I was gonna do whatever. I mean, if they told me to shave all my body hair off, I would have done that too. You know what I mean? So whatever it takes.
It's funny, Tomer. I watched Brent Thompson. So I was lucky enough out of college, I started in the National League. My dad was a trainer for a long time, so I got my foot in the door that way. So I was in Florida with the Florida Panthers my first year, and then I came to Philly, was here for 25 years. But I did do 8 years with the Phantoms. As I went from the assistant, and then I went to the head guy with the Phantoms for like 8 years, and then the Flyers from then on until actually the year you came. I just missed you. But I remember when you guys were doing that, and we had a player that was your assistant coach, Murr. I called him Murr Dog.
Murr.
So yeah, I'm talking to Murr in the hallway, and I see Brent Thompson come out, and he's got what little hair he had left, you know, dyed, you know, it's dyed or mohawk. I can't remember exactly. But I said, holy fuck. I said, Tomer's got his head shaved. He goes, who, two people? And I said, what? He goes, yeah, it's his nickname, two people. And I said, why? He goes, because one person can't be that dumb. And I said, holy shit. I said, I bet you won't say it to his face.
Yeah, right.
But I told Tomer that when he was, he's still working with the Islanders, I think, but a few years ago when he was an assistant with the Islanders, I said, you know, fucking Murr was calling you two people. He's like, fuck that.
Oh yeah. No, that's hilarious. We had a lot of characters on that team. I mean, I'm sure every team does, you know, but like, it was just, I mean, like I said, for a 20-year-old kid coming out of junior, this, I was like, man, this is awesome. I'm having so much fun. I'm just trying to soak it all in, shut my mouth, and just follow the boys around and have a good time. Yeah. And I did. We had a great time. But yeah, I mean, Rob, I had Murr for a while. I actually had him too. I had Rob Murray in, during the last lockout, shortened lockout season. I went and played in Alaska at home
for a little bit.
I had him there as a head coach too. So yeah, he's a good guy. So, but yeah, that was like I said, I miss it. You know, that playoff run, that, you know, losing to you guys was tough, but still, I mean, just that overall, experience was something I'll never forget.
Tomer, I don't know if anyone ever talked to you about Rob Murray's career. He was an American League player. He was a captain basically everywhere he played. I'm going to tell you this. Right there with Pete Vandermeer, the meanest motherfucker you've ever seen on the ice. This guy would carve your he was like Dr. McCracken or whatever from Slap. This guy would carve your eyes out, man. He was so mean. He was the meanest hockey player I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
Man. Crazy. I saw him put a stick to a trainer's throat in Springfield. Put a stick to the trainer's throat. Like he was gonna carve his neck. Like, I'm not kidding you.
Did he get those anger issues figured out or what?
He played for the Phantoms. He was captain for the Phantoms, but he got moved. It was weird. I don't know exactly why, but he got traded halfway through the year. But anyway, I just wanted to say that about him. I don't know if you knew that about him, but he was crazy.
No, yeah, I heard a lot of stories, and you know, obviously he was I don't think he is anymore, but he was the AHL penalty minutes leader for a long time.
I believe that.
I mean, I know he had a ton of tens, but I know he was
him and Dennis Bonvy.
Bones.
Yeah, him and Bones. Yeah. But you know, he was. Yeah, I heard rumors. I heard stories, and then you know, you could tell, right? Like the way he coached, the way he like challenged guys. Like he challenged me a couple times, and we went at it. But I love Murr though, because he was like old school, but fair, you know. Like I remember one time he challenged me, and he really kind of, to be honest, he challenged me to like play with a little bit more of an edge and like, you know, stick up for myself and fight more. And then I started doing that. And I honestly, that was a big reason why, it was because of Rob Murray. And after I started doing that, you know, he pulled me aside, because after one time he kind of gave it to me in front of the team, and we were going back and forth the next day. You know, Murr was the type of guy where he came up to me the next day. He goes, "Hey, listen, like, you know," and we talk it out, right? And
yeah.
He's like, "Hey, that was great of you. What you did the other night, whatever." And I have a ton of respect for Rob Murr, you know, but it's as crazy as he was and as dirty as he was, in his own way, he was an honest, fair guy, you know, yeah. I love Murr. He was great.
Yeah. I enjoyed him too. I enjoyed him here too.
Yeah.
How many years did you have Scott Gordon as a head coach in Providence? I mean, besides the playoffs there.
I had him every year there. So I had him for three more years. I was there for three full years after that. And then I had him again in...
the island, right?
The island, yeah.
And on the island, yep. I had him again on the island. And that's right. Right then, yeah. And that was when we played against you guys in Philly. And I was like, I remember having games against you guys in Philly when I was on the island. And I just remember every game looking at your guys' roster going like, fuck. doing this one, looking at the roster like, all right, I'm just going to try and get someone early, get a fight out of the way right away, then I'm good, you know?
Yeah.
So many, it's funny you say that, because so many people say that, like, when they come on, but looking at the lineups, I mean, it used to be wild.
Yeah. Well, you guys had a couple big meatballs that were rotating in and out, right? With Fritzy Cat and Trevor Gillies. I think Goddard may have moved on. I can't remember then, but there was a few guys that were rotating through.
Yeah, we did. We had Fritzy Cat. I remember we had Joel Reklich.
Oh, yeah. Right,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wrecker. Yeah. Yeah.
Wrecker. Yeah. And then Tim Jackman too. He was on my line, and yeah, it was it was different then, you know, like, yeah. You know, even the American League or in the NHL, you know, you were down 4-5-1 with 10 minutes left. It was like, all right, well,
yeah, right. Here we go.
See what happens the last 10 minutes here, you know? So it was fun. It was a good time.
We used to half the guys used to love watching Trevor in warm-up.
Oh, yeah.
Just his I don't know if you were able to play with, did you play with Trevor Gillies?
I never played with him.
Well, you played against him, so you saw his warm-up routine.
Oh, yeah.
Man, guys would be like, you just got to watch him. So I'm missing, guys are like, hey, Nast, I need a stick. And I'm like, hang on.
watching Gillies over here.
Gillies fucking flying around.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
The old groin stretch.
Yeah, everything.
Hamstring stretch.
He was great. He signed a stick for me, Tomer. I actually asked him for it, and I've never seen someone so excited to sign a stick. He was like, really? I mean, it's like he wrote about 10 things on it.
Oh, yeah.
All the best. Nasty. Yeah. Oh, it's great.
That's awesome.
Oh, man.
I love it.
Well, the reason I was brought up Scott Gordon is I actually worked with him for the Phantoms, I guess, 3 years. And
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, he was the head coach down there, and you know, I'm not surprised why he took to you so quickly in the way he did, because I just, you know, not that it's that difficult to realize, right, when a guy's got heart and grit and character and all that good stuff, it's like, you know, it's like a coach's dream to have a guy coming out of juniors or wherever and play like that. But you know, Gordo's a guy that if he likes you, he likes you, and if he don't, and you know, obviously the fact that you had him for 3 years, and then I'm sure he lobbied for you to bring it into the island there, but you know, Gordo was one of those guys that just, like, you know, he was he was hard and all. I mean, just like any other coach, you just expect guys to show up and dig in, right? And it seems like such a simple concept, but I enjoyed working with Gore. I learned a lot from him, but I think he eventually can wear on guys from just like pushing so hard. But I believe that, you know, you coming out of juniors the way you did and having a guy like Gordo on your side certainly helped you, I'm sure.
Oh, big time. I mean, I think the combination of Rob Murray and Scott Gordon, having them together, it was huge for me. I mean, it was kind of a big piece of humble pie for me coming out of junior. and then having to change my game. I mean, I remember having meetings with Gordo and him telling me like, hey, like, do you want to be in the minors and try and score a ton of points the rest of your career? Or do you want to, you know, make $1 million and be a really good fourth liner and do that for a long time? I'm like, well, I'd like to play in the NHL. And he's like, well, you got to figure it out, kid, you know? And it was an eye opener for me, you know? And he taught me how to be really good at the little things and like perfect, you know, cause Murr was a good face-off guy. And he taught me like, hey, this, you know, he's saying like, you're going to get more ice time if you're really going to face-offs, cause coaches are going to keep putting you out there to take face-offs. And then inevitably you're going to be playing more. And those little things, I kind of like, you know, tried to, I really got to work on these things and get really, really good at this stuff. And Gordo and Murr were those guys that really kind of introduced that to me in my professional career early on. And it wasn't for those guys, I honestly think things could have ended up different. You know, they really, really helped me develop and push me. And like you said, Gordo was hard, right? Like he was a guy that, you know, he expected a lot out of you, but if you showed up and you did it and you pushed and came to work every day, he was fair. And he was a good coach and he's a good guy. He was great. And I enjoyed my time with him. And like I said, he was, both those guys together were a huge part of my success.
Yeah. And it makes things a lot better when you have a guy in your corner, right? And it's not just like for no good reason. They're in your corner because they believe in you, right? They see what you bring, energy you bring. But then they also know that you're coachable enough to take the criticism that they're going to give you, right? I mean, I had John Stevens. I think you had Johnny maybe in L.A. there for a bit. But he was kind of like the, you know, maybe my Scott Gordon, where it's a guy that was, you know, he's hard on me, but he believed in me. And you could just feel that confidence that helped me, you know, take that next step. But it's certainly extremely helpful when you have a guy in your corner that's supporting you as a person and a player and really helping you coach you through it.
Yeah, I think that was you hit it spot on. Like, I think I remember like after the lockout season coming out of junior and then my first full year, I remember like the first 2 months, I'm like, God, Gordo, he was like riding me, like yelling at me in every practice, yelling at me in every game. And I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Like, I was, you know, I'm thinking I was here last year during the lockout, you know, like he's all over me, but he, you know, he cared, right? Yeah. Like it took me for a bit to realize, okay, this guy wants me to succeed. He wants me to, you know, figure it out. And eventually, you know, it took a little bit of time after a few months. I finally did, but things started to come together. And even, you know, which was crazy, he made me a captain my last year, full year in Providence. I was like 23 years old, maybe the captain of the team. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was like huge honor. And, you know, he just, like I said, he saw something in me that I didn't realize and he brought it out of me.
Yeah. Super important stuff. I think that's just like a lesson for all young youth hockey players is, you know, like just the grind, the adversity. And, you know, when a coach is hard on you, it's not just because they got nothing better to do than to be hard on his players. It's like they see potential in you, you know, and you just got to be able to be a more coachable player and listen to it. Right?
The problem is you know, not calling anyone out, but Tom, you're probably seeing it here, the way the game's, you know, turning. Some guys cannot take that anymore.
You're right.
Because they're given a lot at a young age these days, and it's a lot different from when you started, and when I started being an equipment 100%, guy. I mean, it's just, it's so different, but
different animal.
Good for you for, you know, figuring that out, man. And you've had a hell of a career, and you have a lot left to give. So that's good to hear. Yeah. That the Murr Dog had a little Thank bit to you. Do with it. It's awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
we were looking at you know, you played what, five seasons in Tampa, close to five.
Yes.
So
yeah, five seasons. Yeah.
Just randomly looking. That must have been the Flyer. So we counted it up. There were so many guys that either potentially played for the Flyers that you played with or had played for the Flyers. And we started looking at these names. It's crazy. Steve Downey, Nitamaki, Fridge, Matt Walker, Lucas Krajicek, Gagne, Adam Hall, Jones, Randy Jones, Kabina, Gervais, coaches talking, Adam Oates, yourself, Andre Mazaros, Curtis Foster, LeCavalier, Blair Jones, who only played Tukarski, the goalie who's still playing, Matt Carl, Radko Gudas. That's a lot of fucking guys, man, that you played with that either had played for the Flyers or eventually played for the Flyers. So I was like, that's a lot of guys, man. That's crazy.
I didn't realize that many.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I didn't realize there was that many guys. That's a lot.
That's a lot of guys. I probably just went in one ear and out the other, but it's a ton. But we were talking to Rick Talk, and he was on the show a few weeks ago. And I've known Talk since I was a little kid because my dad was his trainer and everything. So he's a great man. But I was telling him when Nitty went there, I couldn't wait to see Antero Nitamaki because we had him with the Phantoms and the Flyers. And I just love Nitty. And so I was coming in the morning, and you guys were going on the ice, but some of the guys were out there early. Who was the coach? They could buzz around. He played in the NHL, just fly, skate. He said he actually had his
Wes Walls. Yeah, yeah, right.
So I see Nitty going out to the bench, and I'm coming down the hallway, and I yell at him, and he stops, and we go to the Tampa Bay bench, and we're sitting there, and I said, you know, like, what's going on, man? He goes, just look at this shit show. He goes, Wes Walls, the guy flying around, he thinks he's better than anyone on the team. He thinks he's the best player, and he's a coach. And he goes, and see Oatsy? And Oatsy was passing some pucks to guys in the slot. He goes, he thinks he's feeding Cam Neely in the slot in the Garden right now. That's what he's thinking. He goes, this is a fucking shit show. He says, I fucking laugh. And that's Nitty. That's a Finn. That's a Finn saying that about Cam.
Sarcastic Finn.
He was so funny, though. But, yeah, you five good years, that's not a bad place to play either, Tampa.
Yeah, no doubt.
No, it was awesome. I mean, I kind of got there at the end of the old ownership. And then I was there the next year with all the new, you know, cause I had Talk and that whole coaching staff, old ownership, old GM. And then everything changed when they got a new owner. Stevie Y came in and he hired Guy Boucher, and then the whole transition that I organized just shifted. And it kind of, to be honest, has never really looked back since.
Right.
And yeah, it was awesome. I mean, my second year there, first, you know, full year with Stevie White, everything, and we ended up going to the conference finals, losing to Boston game seven. And, it really kind of went away. My time in Tampa was really kind of where I solidified myself as an NHL player, and, you know, now I have a career and I'm here and, you know, and being there for five seasons. And we had a really good core group of guys, and I kind of grew up there, to be honest. I really kind of grew up, I grew up with Stammer and these guys, and they were 21, Hedman, those guys, they were all pretty young at the time. And it was a great experience. I mean, obviously playing in Florida is pretty nice. Playing in Tampa. That was nice. But yeah, it was a great experience. I got to play with a lot of good players, you know, get to play with Marty, St. Louis and Vinny and all those guys for as long as I did. And we had our core group of guys was awesome. You know, Stammer and, you know, Teddy Purcell and Vinny, Marty, Bugsy Malone, all these guys.
Yeah. Was, Bugsy.
We had a lot of fun. That's for sure. But it was, like I said, it was definitely a highlight of my career. We had some good teams and, and I think also too, you know, I was growing up, I was a huge huge Wings fan, and having Steve Yzerman as a general manager for me was like, it was awesome. Yeah. You know, so
what a nice man.
It was just a really, really good experience overall to be in there, playing there too.
I've been to a few world championships with Team USA, and we're in Moscow, and this was what, 10 years ago now? It feels like maybe longer than that. Jesus Christ, I'm old. But Stevie Y was doing Team Canada. So we had a game, USA, and a lot of the guys brought Steve Yzerman jerseys to get signed because they knew he was going to be there. They actually traveled to Moscow with these jerseys. And I remember us coming off the ice after first period, and Steve Yzerman was standing just kind of to the left of where we were walking in. And a couple of guys were like, hey, could you sign a jersey? And he goes, boys, yeah, I will, but you got a game. Like, he's Team Kenny. He's telling you, our guys, get in the fucking room, man.
Yeah, right, go focus.
He was laughing. Yeah, he thought it was hilarious, but he was awesome, and he did. He signed a ton of jerseys. But,
that's pretty cool.
I worked out. I got to work out one day in Tampa with him. Yeah. We were there. We had an in-between, and I was in. They let me use the gym, and he came in and worked out, and I was like, oh, I'll get out of here. He goes, why? He's like, stay in here. So I talked to him for like an hour. What a nice man.
Work the pipes out? Or
oh, just... yeah, you know how jacked I am. It's crazy.
No, he was, you know, I think that was the coolest thing for me. It was like, he was my idol growing up, and then getting to build a relationship with him and just see how good of a guy he is. That was the coolest thing. But a couple of funny stories with him though. I remember, we just lost a game in Boston. We lost like 8-1, and this was the year they won the cup. So they were loaded that year.
Yeah.
They were really good. And, it was a regular season game. We lost like 8-1. I'm walking out to the bus with Teddy Purcell, and you know how it is after an 8-1 loss, right? You just put your head down and get on the bus, and he's kind of standing off the side of the bus, and he calls Teddy over, and I kind of like walk over with him because I'm thinking, okay, I should probably go over with him, you know? And he goes, hey, I know we just lost 8-1, but don't ever wear that fucking tie again. And he like kind of smirks. Yeah, he kind of like, that's like a smirk. And I'm like this, like trying not to laugh. We're walking on the bus, you know? And it was just like, he was trying to break the ice, realize the game's the past, fucking forget about it.
Was it a bad tie?
Yeah. Oh, terrible tie.
Terry Crisp.
And then another story is, you know, when he traded me to Anaheim, you know, he called me. I remember it was a Sunday night. And, you know, he traded me to Anaheim, and, you know, he's talking. He's such a class act, right? He's like, you know, I'm glad you're going to a good team, going to a nice spot in Anaheim and all this. And I'm like, he's like, is there anything I can do for you? Let me know. And I'm like, yes, Steve, actually there is. And he's like, well, what's that? I'm like, can you sign a jersey for me? And he's like, and he kind of pauses, and he's like, like a Tampa jersey? I'm like, no, Detroit. Yeah. So a couple of years ago when I was playing Montreal, we finally worked it out. And when we were in there, got a hold of him, and he ended up signing a jersey to me. And I got the game after the jersey. So just a funny trade story after, you know, after he traded me. I'm asking him to sign a jersey for me after the guy trades me.
Yeah,
so,
that's pretty rad. Like
I said, just a great guy, and it was cool to play under him.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Well, he must have been a huge fan of yours because you got, I mean, I'm not sure if he was there when you got picked up off of waivers, but you originally signed a 1-year deal and then a 2-year deal, and then I believe you signed a 4-year deal. Is that right, the way that played out?
I signed two different contracts with Stevie. I guess all three of them actually, because I re-signed 1 year. Yeah, all my contracts were with Stevie, and I remember when he signed me to that 4-year deal. I remember I was the next morning, I was getting on the bus, and he was like, well, this could work out either way. He's like, I'm going to be gone before you, or you're going to be gone before me. And I'm like, yeah, we'll see. So
well, says,
he ended up trading me, so that's how it worked out. But.
It says a lot about you, though, Tomer, that I mean, the guy signed you three times. I mean, like you said, Riggs,
that's impressive.
That's impressive. That really is.
And you mentioned that was when you solidified yourself as an NHL player. Obviously, I mean, you know, for Stevie Y to believe in you that much is, you know, seals the deal, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
it's pretty impressive, especially you being picked up off waivers.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it was awesome. I mean, to get a chance, and then you know, and then him to, you know, continue to believe in me and believe that I was a kind of, you know, part of that core group. That core there was, it was awesome. And, you know, definitely a highlight of my career, you know, being able to play under Steve Yzerman. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
For sure. I got a quick question about one of the goalies, Mike Smith. Smitty's still kicking as far as I know. I don't know if he's hurt or not, but Was he the I don't know if crazy is the word, but like, I just remember him coming by the bench a lot and the boys just chirping him and him like looking over. I thought he was going to come to the bench a couple of times. I used to kind of laugh. I'm like, I love this fucking guy. He's fucking nuts, man. Like, he's like, if you talk about a Philly goalie, him and Ray Emery, like, fit the bill, man. Right. You know? And I just wondered, like, cause you got to play with him. I've met him a couple of times. Actually, I did the All-Star game in 2017 and he was there, but it was so funny. He had his boys with him. And, you know, you just would even see that. That's how he used to be. He did fight Cam Talbot a couple years ago. I just wondered if he was like a little wild, you know, like as a player.
Yeah. Smitty, super competitive guy. Yeah. Right? And there's a reason why he's still playing. He definitely has that. He can get a little tangly, you know what I mean? Where things wires cross and he loses the shit. You know what I mean? He was one of those guys that was, you know, he'd be in between periods and he'd be yelling at guys or he'd be like into the game. Like, you know, usually goalies don't say anything. They just sit in the locker room. They're quiet. He's one of those guys that's fiery or he's yelling at guys or chirping guys on their team. And he's a guy I think too, like, you saw the way he's no slouch. Like, he could take care of himself. He was a really, really fun guy to play with. And just one of those guys too, that I remember, like I said, the reason why he's still playing, such a good athlete and just jacked and always in unbelievable shape. And one of those guys, he plays any sport. He's good at everything. You know, he was a really fun guy to play with and definitely a fiery guy.
Yeah, I just used to love that because he just had a look. Like, I'm like, boys, you better watch it. This fucking guy looks nuts, man. I used to love that, though, because he was always looking over. And the other one thing I wanted to just bring up quickly, it has nothing to do with anything, was I just remember us being there and we had Peter Laviolette was coaching us at the time, who was very fiery as soon as the puck dropped, you know. But Guy Boucher pulled you guys back. I don't know if it was a left wing, but he wouldn't let you guys. You guys were not coming basically across the red line, maybe quite to the blue.
Yeah.
So Prongs has the puck. Chris Pronger's got the puck, and he's circling. And the refs blow the whistle, come over there, and they're telling Lavi, you got to move. And he's like, fuck you. He's got to go. Like, it was a shit show, man, the first, 10 minutes of the game.
Happened a couple times in the first, didn't it?
Yeah. It kept happening. And, you know, and I just, on your side of things, because you're on the other side, like, were you guys like, hey, like, can we play? Or were you just like, oh, we got to do what we got to do?
I remember that was the famous Guy Boucher 1-3-1.
Right.
And I remember, I think that was a nationally televised game too.
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was.
Yeah, and I remember it was like he's yelling at us not to move. We could hear Laviolette yelling at his guys not to move. And I remember sitting on the bench. And I'm like, is this really fucking happening right now? Like, this is really, this is super embarrassing, you know. And I remember after the game too. I think Paul Bissonnette, Biz, tweeted something like, I remember I was dying laughing. He's like, thanks to Philly and Tampa, you guys are chipping away at our escrow every 1-3-1 at a time or something like that. Something hilarious where I was like, it was awesome. But I remember too, it was Pronger. I think another time they blew it down, I think Coburn had the puck. And he was basically doing like forward, backward stops with the puck. You know what I mean? So he looked like he was still moving. And I remember him sitting on the bench and Jágr comes over and leans on our bench and looks over at us and goes, boys, you guys keep this up. I'm going to play till I'm 50.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
I remember I took my glove and a couple of us took my gloves off. Trying to cover my face, trying not to laugh, you know, because I'm like, I can't believe this is happening right now. But I think we ended up winning the game in overtime.
You guys won. You definitely won the game. And he was, you know, Boucher after is pretty cocky and you know, about the win. Yeah. But it was, I remember Lavi was, I mean, he lost his, I love Lavi. Like, I loved his fire the way he was, but he was losing his mind, man.
Well, it's because Lavi was trying to rip off the left wing lock from you guys. Because I was coaching at the time, and we were, you know, all the systems were passed down in the minors. We're doing this left wing lock thing, and it was, you know, all the video we watched was Tampa. So I think he was like, you know, on his like, you know, pride seat, and he wanted to kind of win the 1-3-1 game. I don't know what he was trying to do there, but
I don't either.
But yeah, he was trying to puff his chest out and show that he wasn't going to bite into it or whatever. It lands up being a little pissing contest there.
I remember just talking to whoever the battle, I don't remember who the backup goalie was, but I'm like, I literally have never seen this before. I've been doing this a long time. I've never seen anything.
You'll never
like
see
this.
It again, probably.
No, probably not. Hopefully not.
I hope not. Yeah, I definitely don't want to be playing that game either. That was kind of embarrassing. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the left wing locks. Maybe another year or two after that, it kind of disappeared a little bit. There's still like a 1-3-1, but I think that specific one that was so like, you know, passive, I guess you could say, certainly doesn't fly in this NHL.
No,
definitely not.
You know, and you landed up playing for Guy in Ottawa, I guess, a couple of years later, right? You landed up playing 2 years in Anaheim and then signed as a free agent. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I ended up playing three full years in Anaheim, and then I signed. I signed as a free agent in Ottawa, and I was back with Guy. But I went to Ottawa, and things kind of just went south pretty quick there, and I think I was only in Ottawa for about 5 months, and then I got traded to LA. So Guy was I had Guy for, I don't know, a few years, 2 or 3 years in Tampa and then in Ottawa, and same thing, you know, like a different style of coach, more of an X's and O's guy. And but I had a good relationship with him, and you know, he's a coach that really kind of likes a hard nose third, fourth line guys. He plays them, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, he was a guy that, like I said, another coach that was in my corner, that it worked out that I got to, you know, play for him again in Ottawa, just not for very long. Sometimes things didn't work out, but, good guy, worked extremely hard. Like I said, X and O's guy, and, I had fun playing for him.
Yeah. And you guys didn't have a very good team that year, right?
We got off to a good start, and then then kind of the wheels just fell off. Yeah. And then at that point they start dealing guys like they do, right? So
yeah.
It happens.
So, yeah. Yes, it does.
And then a big trade to LA. You landed up squeezing in some PP time there in LA that I saw.
Oh yeah. That was actually the next year, but I got traded to LA, and I had Johnny Stevens, he was a head coach, and you know, me and Dion Phaneuf got traded together, and then we had a pretty good team, and just ran into a hot Vegas team first round, the year they went to the Cup Finals.
Yeah, really. That's right.
You know, every game we had against them in that first round was one goal game. I think, I want to say, like, both goalies, their save percentage and goals against was under two in the series. So no one was scoring goals. They were just beating us by one goal every game. And, so we just, it didn't work. And then had Johnny the next year, and, you know, Johnny got let go, earlier in the season, and then they hired Willie Desjardins. And, that's when I got on the PP again for the first time in however since minor hockey. I don't know. I remember we were sitting in the video room, and we just got done doing, like, you know, regular 5-on-5 stuff, and okay, we're going to do PP now. And I've, you know, obviously get up, walk out. That's what I've done my whole life. And I think Marco Sturm was the assistant. He's like, Tomer, sit down, stay. I looked at him, I'm like, fuck you. Fuck off. You know, like,
good prank
there. Like that. Yeah. He's like, no, seriously, you're in the PP meeting. And I'm like, what? So I ended up playing, 12 games in the power play, and, you know, went okay, but it's just, you know, not my thing. I haven't played that in a while. And to be honest, I shouldn't be on the power play. It's not my forte, but it's funny enough. Like, we had one game in Nashville, and I scored a goal, and we were on the power play, but the power play just expired. So I didn't get the power play goal. It would end up being a 5-on-5 goal. But just
that's funny
shit. Look back on in the career and say that I got to play the power play for a bit. Almost scored a power play goal.
Yeah, right.
I remember. So Johnny Stevens comes back here in the summer. He's got a place down at the shore, so I always go down and see him a few times. And that year when you guys lost to Vegas, literally every game was a one goal game. And he was like, this is weeks after, and he was still. We're sitting there having a couple, you know, drinks and a couple beers, and he's just like, every game, one goal. You know, he was just, you know how Johnny is. Yeah. He had the eye going. Yeah. He was wound up. He's like, the guys played so good. We just couldn't score. But that was a hell of a series, and it was. Every damn game was a one-goal game. But
it was. Yeah, and Johnny was awesome. I really enjoyed playing for Johnny Stevens. He was great.
I love Johnny.
Just a guy. Yeah, he was awesome. I really liked him a lot. He was a lot of fun to play for. I'm glad he's still coaching, and I hope he gets a head job eventually again, because he's a really good coach. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Johnny.
Yeah, I think you got a little bit. You know, in LA, such a a big market, and I think you got a little bit of a shaft there. But Johnny pours his heart and soul into whether it's his head coach, assistant coach. I mean, this guy like literally lives and breathes hockey more than most guys I've seen. Like,
I used to a lot of times be like, Johnny, relax, smile, man. Come on, come on, dude. Be like, fuck. Wow, we lost, whatever. Yeah, right. We had this guy, Quickly Tomer, in the American League with the Phantoms, and his name was what do we call him? The TNT, not TNT, Craig Brunell, but we call him POD, Pack of Dynamite. Yeah, yeah. So he fought this poor guy, man. My arms were longer than his. And I love Bruno, but he was tough as nails. But he'd just stand there and just get clubbed. He's fighting Goddard. This guy's got an 8-inch reach on him.
Right.
But we lost both games. We were in Houston. We lost both games. Bruno met a friend that didn't get him back to the hotel on time. So we're all on the bus, and we've lost two in a row. Johnny's just fuming. It was a scene out of a movie. This Camaro comes flying down the road and basically just whips a UE almost on its side, and Bruno jumps out and he gets on the bus and he says, sorry, Johnny. And Johnny just is looking at him, and I'm sitting beside Johnny. Well, we're not paying attention. The chick driving gets out of the car, and I'm looking at Bruno. She jumps on the bus, Tomer. Now Johnny's like, she smelled like a brewery. Like, there's no way she'd been operating anything. But she jumps on and she goes, are you the coach? And Johnny's just looking at her. His eyes are spinning, right? And all the boys are just like, oh, my God. And she goes, all I know is Bruno fucking rocks, like that. And the whole bus just explodes, with the exception of Johnny. And Neil Little, I don't know if you've met Neil, but Neil's in the back. And he goes, show us your tits, like that. So then another explosion. So he goes, get off the bus. So this girl gets off the bus, and we're maybe 5 minutes down the road, and guys are just trying to hold in their laughter. And I looked over, I'm like, Rambo. I call him Rambo. That's his nickname, Rambo. I'm like, Rambo, that was fucking funny. And he's like, it was. That's all I could get out of it, though. But just he's such an intense guy, but he's a great guy, though.
Yeah, I love Johnny.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great story. That's awesome.
Bruno.
I love that.
I know we're creeping on an hour here, Tomer, and you got a family to get back to, but I did want to touch on some personal issues you've dealt with and demons that you faced. You've been sober for a long time now. And talk about, the importance of people that are struggling with mental health to seek help and be open and vulnerable about it. Because I feel like there's still this stigma of not showing your hand and not asking for help and then bottling it up, and it festers even more. Because I think it's so important for people to hear that. But, you've overcome a lot in your life, and you faced adversity, and you're still in the NHL performing at a high level around guys that still drink, and you're able to, navigate and be comfortable and still be a leader without having to, think that you have to participate. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it goes a little over 5 years now, and it's, it's been, for me, I mean, I look back and now probably my biggest accomplishment in my life, I think. And I always say that if I wasn't sober, I wouldn't be talking to you guys today. I wouldn't still be playing. And like you said, Coach, like it's the stigma around, and I think it's, I mean, our profession, our culture, you know, athletes as a whole, it's, you know, you work hard and you play harder, right? Like that's the way it is. That's the way it was coming into the league and at a young age and even junior. And, you know, the whole stigma around, you know, like you said, it's, you know, no one talks about their feelings. No one talks about if they're struggling or whatever it may be, you know, and for me, that's what, because I, you know, I did struggle with mental health and depression and anxiety and all this stuff, you know, for me, the easiest out was to, you know, drink and use. And that's kind of the way people go sometimes, right? If they're not feeling good or things aren't going well, you know, you numb yourself. And, you know, I think it's starting to get a little bit better. You know, I think people are starting to talk about it a little bit more, but I think it's still a work in progress. And, you know, for me now, I think, you know, at first, and I think after I had about a year of sobriety, I was pretty apprehensive about talking about it, and being open about my sobriety, but realizing that, you know, I kind of have a platform and, you know, being a guy that could talk about it, you know, maybe I realized, you know, it's not about me, right? It's about everyone else. And it's about helping someone. And if me talking about it, us talking about it here, and someone's listening on the podcast and maybe they're struggling, they hear us talking about it and they're like, oh shit, you know, I'm going to ask for help. You know, if there's just one person, you know, that's a win. And, you know, I think it's just, you know, it's a constant, I mean, for me, I always say like, yeah, it's been 5 years and it's a huge accomplishment, but like it doesn't end for me. It's not like I'm like, okay, I've reached the top, I've reached the pinnacle, that's it, I don't have to do anymore. Like it's an everyday thing for me. It's an everyday, like I said, like a muscle. I have to work at it. I have to work on my recovery. I have to work on my mental health, and I have to make sure that I'm in a good place, because if I'm not, then, you know, I'm not going to be the best version of myself to my teammates, you know, whoever it is, especially my son, my family, you know, everyone. And, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, we have one life and you want to live it the right way. And, you know, I think, you know, being able to talk about your feelings and talk about your mental health and being open about it, you know, that's, to me, like that's being brave, and that's bringing courage and knowing that, you know, like everyone says, knowing it's okay not to be okay. And, you know, like I said, I'm glad you brought it up. I'm glad you asked me about it, because I think it's something that needs to be talked about more. And, especially in the time we are right now, in the world we live in right now, you know, with COVID and all this stuff, and, you know, these poor kids, you know, that are having to do school at home, and, you know, all these different scenarios that people are going through. It's tough. And I think the more we talk about it, the more people hopefully will get help.
Yeah, 100%. I think there's a huge lesson here too. Like you've mentioned it a couple of times, where it's like a muscle, right? Like mental health is something that needs constant work, you know, just like the physical body. Yeah. If you want to stay in shape, you got to exercise and you got to do certain things. Like the mind's the same thing. And I think, exactly, like, you know, yeah, you know, and a lot of times we talk about this on the back end of, you know, people's addictions or substance abuse and whatever else. But to me, this needs to be a focus on the front end. You know, you talk about youth hockey players, junior hockey players, all the way through pro. Like, how many teams have you been on, or how many coaches have you talked to that have actually pushed, you know, the mental health and mental fitness component of it, right? I mean, it's like you got these strength coaches, you got all these different people in the organization. But to me, you know, the mind is everything. And I still don't think in this day and age that we talk about this nearly enough. You know, not just like on the back end when we're struggling, but like on the front end, like let's get ahead of this. Like, let's not just get ahead of it. Like, let's optimize this. Because, I mean, you've seen it. Like, there's a lot of guys that never make it. And it's not because they're not physical specimens. It's because of the mind, right? It's like they're not able to, you know, concentrate or focus, wherever it ends up being. But the mind can get away from you. So imagine if we actually spent some energy and time and resources on training the mind, you know, and be able to control it. Maybe we wouldn't have to have some of these conversations on the back end where guys struggle because they don't have any tools to navigate. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think, yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the reason, like, you know, like I said, it's good that we talk about it now, because maybe some young kids, like, you know what, I'm gonna start doing meditation, or I'm gonna start doing all these different things that I need to do to help my keep my mind sharp and keep me in a good headspace, because I don't want to, like you said, I don't want to get to that point where, like for me, you know, I had to help after, you know, on the back end of it, of getting sober and all that, and I had to, you know, get back to a good place where why not get ahead of it? Where, yeah, like you said, if you're trying to be a hockey player physically, what are you doing? You're working out every day, you know, you're working your legs, you're working your thing, you know, whatever it may be. Well, it's the same thing, like you said, same thing with your mind. Why can't you do that too? I think you hit the nail on the head. I totally agree with that. And I think if, you know, starting in minor hockey, even now into college, pro, whatever it may be, I think if you could have a team that has a guy or a way to, you know, take care of the mental side of things. I mean, you know, I always say, I mean, if you're, you know, your body, you know, your body feels stress, right? Your body knows when you're stressed out, things don't work right. Sometimes guys get hurt, and a lot of that's all comes from your head, you know. Yeah. And if your mind's not in a good place, if your mind's not in a good place, your body's not going to be in a good place. And I think it goes hand in hand. And I sure. think that I think you hit the nail on the head with that.
And how much of this like translates into your, you know, your current present day performance? I mean, you're 5 years sober. I mean, it's got to be night and day the way you feel, you know, physically and mentally, right? I mean, it's a different animal altogether. And how are you able to bring that around the locker room and still hold that leadership position, you know? Because it's not about the booze. It's about you as the individual. Can you talk to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, guys, you know, our sport is so great, right? Like, you know, the guys, I mean, we're biased, but like, you know, the hockey guys are, you know, in our people are hockey people in our profession are just such good people. I mean, from the time I got sober, you know, and every team I've been on, guys are so supportive of me being sober and love that I am. And, you know, and guys are always respectful of that. And, you know, I'm never a type of guy to be, I'm never going to tell a guy, hey, be careful of your drinking or whatever it may be. You know, that's not my place. And guys can drink responsibly. I couldn't, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I couldn't control myself. They can. And it's not my place to tell what they should do. But at the same time, you know, I just, you know, I'm a guy that, you know, some hopefully guy knows that I'm sober, and, you know, I try and make myself available to any guy if they want to talk, whatever it may be. And, you know, if maybe a guy is struggling mentally and, you know, knows that I've been through it, and he knows maybe he can come talk to me, you know. But I'm never a guy, because, you know, I think with anything, you know, you can't force someone to get help. You know, they have to kind of want it. So I think in that way, you know, I just try to, you know, I think lead by example and come to the rink every day in a good mood and happy to be there, have fun with the guys. And, you know, and then, you know, whenever we go out or when I'm with the guys, you know, I try to be the last guy there with all the boys, you know, I mean, that's, and I don't have any issues with that, but, you know, just, I hope, hopefully guys know that I'm there, knows that, you know, if there's something they need or want to talk about, or need help with anything, that, you know, I'm a guy that they can lean on. And, you know, that's the cool part about now being sober, is being able to be, you know, a guy that's, you know, someone, you know, I think that's what it's all about, is helping people, right? You know, and for me, if I'm helping, somebody, I'm inevitably helping myself.
Yep.
And that's kind of the way I look at it. So, hopefully, you know, the guy, whoever I play with on whatever team is comfortable to come talk to me. And that's kind of the way that, I gotta go, you know, I go about it.
They're lucky to have you, man. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Super important work. And you know, much respect for you to first of all, acknowledge it and then, you know, act on it. You have the discipline to do it. And then there's not many guys that are current players that have gone through this and are sober that are still playing. You know, I think it's usually after the fact, after they retire, that they kind of identify they have a problem and they try and fix it. But you know, props to you, because, you know, you said, you know, I think talking about this and being vulnerable is the only way you could really help people. Because if you bottle it up and don't talk about it, then no one really knows the struggles you've gone through. And from what I've learned is the more you talk about things, you know, the more you can accomplish and more people you can help. Yeah, so
exactly. I agree.
Some real good work there. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. And facing your demons, no one ever wants to do it, but it's necessary if you want to have a higher quality of life, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, no, it is. I mean, you said it. I mean, and whatever it may be. I mean, even if and I'm not saying that, you know, even if you maybe you don't have a drinking or drug problem, but you still have mental health issues, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean, mental health is mental health. And, you know, like you just said, I mean, I know we beat a dead horse here, but I do think, yeah, I mean, you got to ask for help. You got to be vulnerable. You got to be willing to talk about it, because that's the only way that, it's the only way things will get better. And like you said, if you want a high quality of life and, you know, you have a family and kids and, you know, all those things, you know, you want to be the best version of yourself, and that's the best way to do it. So.
Yeah. Well, appreciate your insights there, and wish you the best, with what you're doing and in your recovery. I know it's an everyday thing, so.
Got to get you back here.
Yeah.
Got to get you back.
Absolutely. Thanks, boys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
Well, before we let you go, Nate, we just wanted to just talk a little bit about the Flyers and you know, tough start, coaching change. I mean, what are your feelings? Just get a high level view of you know, what you've experienced this year, and a little bit of a up and down year, but seems to be in rolling in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I believe in this group. I mean, you know, we had a pretty decent start, and then obviously things went downhill in a hurry, and you know how fast that can happen in this league, right? It can be a snowball effect quick, and honestly, I think there were a lot of games where even the games that we lost, we played pretty good. It could have gone either way, and unfortunately, it's a part of the business where changes are going to be made, you know, whether it's going to be coaching staff, players, whatever it may be. You know, I had a good relationship with AV and Michelle Therrien, and it's unfortunate, but at the same time, you know, Mike Yeo, I think, is a good coach, and he's been around, and since he's come on, I think he's tweaked a few things, and you know, I think before that he did a really good job with RD, and I think that's a huge component of, I think you could see some of our defensemen, like a guy like Travis Sanheim.
Yeah.
I think he's really, really kind of, you know, turned on his game to another level. And I think it's a huge, 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 huge credit to Yosi. I think that, you know, having him behind the bench as a defenseman coach and now as a head coach, and, you know, you'd see how comfortable some of our guys are. And I think, you know, obviously getting healthy is a big part of it, right?
Yeah,
you know, you want to stay healthy. And but I think, you know, like you said, before Christmas break, I think guys were, you can kind of see our team turning a corner, and you know, it's still early, right? Like there's still a lot of season left. You know, I think we have a great group. We have a great group of guys. I mean, off the ice, it's one of the best groups I've played with. You know, everyone loves being around each other. Everyone loves hanging out. You know, and you know, I think that's why it was, you know, even talking to guys, you know, I was gone for part of that, you know, that losing streak that we had going on, and talking to guys and saying, checking in, guys were saying, like, it didn't even feel like we were on a losing streak, because that's how, you know, fun guys still have coming to the rink, you know, and how much of a positive attitude we have in our room. And I think that, you know, I think that things will get better as the season goes on. I think that we have the group. I think we have a little bit of everything in our lineup. And I think once we get healthy and get guys back, and, you know, I think having Yosi now too, behind the bench, and him getting more comfortable and guys getting more comfortable in his system, I think, I honestly think sky's the limit for our team. You know, I know things went south in a hurry, but I think things can get better in a hurry too.
Yeah, and they really have. I mean, when Yosi jumped in there, you know, he didn't even have a chance for practice, and, you know, he still dropped a couple games, and, you know, some people, just hang on, boys. Like, you know, a few years ago we had a 10-game losing streak, and, I mean, it's just like you say, like, games probably you should have won. You know, we should have won that you don't. And we turned it around and made the playoffs that year. And you guys have a way better team, I think, than we did that year.
Still really early.
And like it's so said. Early. And that's the thing. It's like you said, that was a great point, Tom. It's so early. And we even said that last week. Riles and I actually were in Arizona. We went to that game with our buddies, the fans of Philly. But you could just see every game it's getting tighter as far as the boys, the way they're playing, like you said, Yosi's system. So, like you said, the sky's the limit, man. They get everyone back, and maybe it was a good thing getting these injuries early, getting them out of the way here. Yeah. And, you know, hopefully everybody stays healthy, knock on wood, and can't wait to get you back in the lineup, big boy.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. I agree. I think I think it's better that we go through this now than later in the season, and, you know, makes us better, makes everyone better for it. And hopefully the boys can, you know, go on a nice run here. And then when I get back, we're in the mix. So
that's right.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
That's right. And you know, with all the bumps in the road, you guys are still 4 points out of the wild card.
Right,
you know
there.
What I mean? It's like, it's not even like, out of reach by any means.
Our division is crazy, right? Like I think it's the best division in hockey. And, you know, you lose four and you're out of it, and you win four and you're right there back in the day.
Exactly.
So we're going to be just fine. Not worried at all.
Good.
100% agree.
All right, man.
Well, we appreciate you hopping on here, Tomer.
Thanks for your time, buddy. We really do appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
All right.
All right.
We'll talk to you soon.
See you, Tomer.
All right, boys. See ya.
That episode was brought to you by Mike O.T., Living Mycelium Beverage, the original Nectar of the Gods, Nass.
That's what they're telling me, and it tastes like it.
Oh, yeah. Got some reishi. And for those of you that don't understand or know about the world of fungi, this stuff is amazing. Huge part of my daily regimen. Energy, focus, clarity.
Longevity.
And, you know, the world of fungi is fascinating. So check it out. Myco Tea at drinkmycotea.com. A huge thank you to our man, Nate Thompson.
Nate Dogg, love him.
Amazing career that he's having.
Still
playing on a bunch of teams. He's had success. He's a glue guy.
Got to have a guy like him. We talk about this all the time. He's loved by everybody in the room. He does his job. He never complains about ice time, about this or that. He kills penalties. He fights when he has to fight. He just plays the game the right way.
Yeah, and over 800 hockey games in the NHL. Is not by accident.
Exactly.
Face-off guy. I think he's over 56-57% face-offs every year. You know, overcome some demons.
Yeah.
Guys in their locker room respect him.
Yes.
And he's a guy you want on your team. We talked about this before they re-signed him this year, that we needed a guy like him or something, you know, along that line.
Right.
So a sandpaper guy, glue guy in the locker room. And, you know, he's done an amazing job. Obviously, unfortunate for his injury, but sounds like he's ahead of schedule with his rehab. He's doing well out in L.A., so wish him the best. And hopefully he can return here in the near future and you know, help the Flyers want to run.
Yep, I think he will.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
Appreciate you, Nate.
Thanks, brother.
That's a wrap. Episode 55 in the books. Until next week, episode 56. Check us out. Till then, stay safe. Have fun, knuckleheads.
See you, knuckleheads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.